Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catstastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another very fun episode. I have promised you, the listeners, a wide variety of Cats-related content, and today we continue down that path as I welcome a Cats superfan. My guest today, Nat DiMario, is part of the infamous Cats Junkyard, has a Cats blog, and saw the 2016 Cats revival 88 times. So I have a billion questions for you, Nat. So welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I definitely am going to ask you about the 88 time, but I want to save that because what I want to first start is just general Cats fandom. Like, how did you get into the play? Like, what was the genesis of your fandom?
Well, I first saw Cats when I was in fifth grade. This was like, I don't know, 2011. When it came on tour through my town, and I fell in love with it. And, you know, at the time, like, fandom and the internet was all very new, and I was like a baby basically. But I used to like play Cats with one of my like good friends who also really loved the musical, and we would like pretend to be characters. I would pretend to be Mr. Mistopheles and she would pretend to be Demeter. And then I started writing like Cats fan fiction when like that was just sort of becoming a thing that people did. And then I fell out of it for quite a few years. And then when the Broadway revival opened and I went to see it, my love sort of came back instantly. And I just completely fell back into it, got sort of re-obsessed with all the characters, started connecting with other fans on Twitter mostly. And it all just sort of came rushing back to me as if it was, you know, 2011 again.
So you, what type of fan fiction did you write? Because there's a lot out there.
I wrote, when I was younger, I wrote a lot of like stuff set in the universe, but made up like original characters and sort of like put them into that universe, like interacting with the canon characters. More recently, the fan fiction that I wrote, like during the revival time period, was about the actual like canon characters based on things that it like that I had observed during the show, like little interactions that I like expanded on and like wrote like longer stories about.
Incredible. I really think so. You're part of that Junkyard group, and I think that there is Tyler yes. Haynes mentioned it, and a couple who have mentioned that there are rumors and stuff that come from the amount of times your group has seen the show. So like, tell me yes. more about like about that, being part of that group.
You know, it was very strange because our group, I was the person who saw it the most. I'm pretty sure I'm the person who saw the revival the most out of like literally anyone like who saw it. But my friend group, the Junkyard, it ranged from people who saw it like once or twice only to me. But we all were so invested in the characters, in the actors and the like specific portrayals of the characters, that we would go and we would literally watch a different cat basically every time we saw it. And we picked up on little interactions that would be different every night or that they would do all the time that just like the average person seeing the show for the first time would never pick up on. So definitely the most like sort of infamous one was Tugger Shanks, which is the Skimble Shanks and Rum Tum Tugger ship that started with me the first time I saw the show before the fandom sort of reblossomed. And it came from this moment in Act Two during the Peaks and the Pollicles, the song that like Gus performs, where Skimbleshank sort of walks away and he goes and he sits over next to the Rum Tum Tugger on like the car trunk. And they just have like some interaction. Like Skimble gets up and just like storms away. And I watched that and I said, what is happening here? And it just sort of became this joke that became more serious that we like mentioned to the actors at the stage door, like, what's up with like Skimbleshanks and Tugger's friendship? And it just sort of went from there and became a thing that they actually played like on stage.
Yeah, you influenced the show.
It was like very weird.
You influenced the show.
Yeah.
Like that's like an amazing thing.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird to think about.
Because that's like when I was researching for both of those characters and I was like trying to understand like their backstories and all the phenomena, it was like there's something going on in the 2016 revival and I couldn't figure it out. And then Tower Haynes kind of confirmed it and said it was you. It was like your group of friends that they just decided to kind of continue with, which is incredible. So I want to talk about the fact that you saw it 88 times. So I did some math. The 2016 revival had 593 performances and 16 previews. So there were 609 opportunities to see the show. You saw it 88 times. It's roughly 76 weeks worth of shows. So you saw just under 15% of the performances and saw over one a week.
Yeah.
My only question is just why? Like how, why, like, how did you make that happen? I know you said you were a student in New York, so you were already, you know, you're obviously close to the theater. Like you had that ability to kind of to get there easily, but that's an incredible commitment. Like that's more than people do when they join a sports team, like for fun. Like it's you did this for 2+ years or for over a year and a half, every week, if not more. To see the same thing. I mean, it's like, it's incredible. And so again, my question is why and how?
The why is, it started with just, oh, I really enjoyed this. I want to go see it again. And usually the shows that I like, I try to go back and see a couple of times. But with Cats especially, there are so many characters and so many different people who understudy those roles. A lot of it actually became going back to see understudies play roles and to see different portrayals of the characters. And my friends and I made sort of a habit of trying to find out when like swings were going on for the first time and playing different roles. And we would make a point to go and see it and see those performances. So that's where a lot of the trips came from. But I just sort of got so used to being there all the time and having something fun to do that I knew I enjoyed doing that it would just be like, oh, I had like a hard day, like a hard day at school, like a long week. Let's go see Cats, like for fun. So that was the why. And the how was the Broadway Direct Lotto was a lifesaver. Those $40 tickets. I think not a lot of people were entering the Cats Lotto because basically anytime I entered, I won.
Right.
And it was super easy. And I lived, you know, 10 minutes away from the theater. So it was very easy to just scoot down there and go see it on a whim, basically. And there were times when I would rush down there literally like half an hour before the show started because I found out that some understudy was going on and I would run up to the box office and be like, give me your cheapest seat in the balcony, please. And I would just go in and see it.
So I know you have a Cats blog, and one thing that I read that I thought like I really appreciated was that you mentioned that when you find something that you like and it gives you happiness, like you shouldn't even have to apologize for it. So it's like the 88 times is just like, I do think it's the most anyone's ever seen the revival. Like you definitely have to be holding that torch. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, some people watch sporting events or watch whatever, or turn on their favorite record. And it's like, yours just happens to be Cats. And so like, I do think it's kind of cool. Did you track who you got to see? Was there anybody that you didn't get to see that you wish you could see you do a performance?
Yeah, there were a couple of understudies who went on that I never got to see. Sam Lipps understudied Tugger, and I never got to see him go on. He only went on a couple of times, and it happened right at the end of the run. And I went out of town like the week of Christmas, so right before the show closed. And he went on like the night that I left town, and I was so angry. And there were a couple of understudies that I only got to see once, like early in the run, and then they never went on again. And I wished so badly that I could see them again. Callan Bergman, who is one of the swings, he understudied Mistopheles. And the first time I saw the revival, he was Mistopheles. And I like fell in love with his performance. And he only went on like two other times, and I didn't get to see either of those. And I spent the entire rest of the run just wishing that he would go on again. And he never did, which was very sad.
So you touched on this a little bit about that you watched like one character the whole show, but like, what did you pick up on time number 36 seeing the show versus time number two versus time number 75? You know, like, I mean, how, like, was there aha moments later on, like when you got past the halfway point of seeing it?
You know, it's funny because I think the longer I went and the more times I saw it, I would actually start to sort of zone out in the middle of it because it was just like, I've seen this so many times. I know it so well, and I don't have to like pay as close attention to be able to sort of get the full experience. The things that I started really leaning into later on were the moments when the cats like interact with the audience. Because I usually was not lucky enough to get like seats close to the stage when I, you know, entered the lotto, because those seats are random and it's based on what's like left in the theater. But there were always these seats in like the front row on the very sides that are only sold at the box office, and so they're always empty. And me and my friends would always move up to those seats during intermission. And the interactions you get with the cats when you're sitting up close are the best, because the actors, you know, got to know us. And so when they would come off the stage during Mistopheles and be like dancing in the aisle, like they would see us and they would be like happy to see us as actors and audience members. And that was always really what I looked forward to in the second half of the run, was those interactions. But yeah, whenever I was there watching like a new understudy, I would especially watch them and I'd be like, what did this person do differently than the other people who I've seen play the role? And how did they interpret the character? And it was stuff like that. And it would be like the random little like ensemble cats that I would be so invested in.
That's amazing. Because those are the ones that like most people don't even know names,
right?
Like their names, let alone who's performing, what's the nuances to that.
Right.
Okay, so you have to be one of the, I mean, do you consider yourself one of the like the biggest Cats fans? Like, you have a blog, you're part of the Junkyard, you wrote fan fiction. Are you part of the Tumblr group?
I used to be, not anymore. And honestly, I've sort of fallen out of the Cats fandom. I've sort of like moved on to other things now, because I can't sort of, not that Cats is like a dead fandom, but once the show closed and like there wasn't new stuff to do every day, I just sort of like moved on to other stuff. But my love for it is always there. So all that to say, like, I was in like the Tumblr fandom while the show was open. And there were like huge sort of rifts between us, because it was the people who saw the Broadway revival and liked it, and all like the older fans of the show are like the European fans who hated the Broadway revival because it was different. And like, we could never like find peace. It was sort of a nightmare.
So there is within the Cats fandom a traditionalists and then the modern interpretation group.
Yeah.
That are arguing.
Yeah, that's always, wow. That's been my experience. There's a Facebook group that's mostly for like Cats cosplay that I'm in, but I never post in anymore. But there would always just be arguments, and there would be the European fans being like, the Broadway revival is trash and this thing they did differently is bad and this thing is bad. And I'd be like, it's fun though.
Did you ever, you should come back by saying, but they did the Street Tugger in Europe.
That's what, like, I said. I'm like, at least we brought back like the real Rum Tum Tugger. Like, you guys, like,
that was the biggest mistake.
Yeah, you guys are
in
not
all
innocent.
Of Cats history.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the plot.
Yeah.
As probably the biggest fan that I've spoken with, and I've talked to a few, but you, especially with the revival, because you saw the revival, which is the my entire context of the show, mm-hmm. Besides the 1998 movie. What have I gotten wrong? Like, what am I totally off on things that I've kind of made up as an outsider looking in?
I think that the biggest thing that I sort of disagree with your interpretation of the plot is I've never seen it as so much that they are competing and that every performance that they do is like an audition to go to the Heaviside layer. I see the Jellicle Ball as like a big celebration of like who they are, and they don't see each other most of the time except for once a year. So they get together. They're as Jellicles, what they do is they sing and dance. That's just like who they are. So it's more of like, we're going to go, and if you want to perform, like, go ahead and perform. And there are just certain cats who you know are candidates for going to the Heaviside Layer, and some who are not, in my opinion. And so it's more,
it's more, totally fair.
Yeah.
The movie, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, the movie definitely painted it as this is a competition. And I've just never seen it that way.
Did you go to a preview?
Yes. No, that's not true. No, I did not get to see it in previews. I saw it for the first time after it had already opened.
Okay. But you definitely saw the original, like the first group, right?
Yes.
My narrow interpretation. Again, mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you. I think there's a lot of ways. I think that's the beauty of the show. There's a lot of ways to interpret.
Oh, yeah.
But I was basically sold this with Leona Lewis.
That's fair.
And so I think because of that, I was like X Factor. And I was like, and then like when I saw a miniature version of X Factor, like almost a meta version of X Factor pop up on the stage, that was immediately where my head went. And so now the more I've like looked at it and I've watched the 1998 movie and heard people talked about it, like I think that your version has probably way more merit than mine. But that was not the way I like walked out. And so that's the angle I've stuck with. And that's what all of my frame of reference. So I actually think I can see your point. I can concede that point. Is there any of the theories I've made up that you disagree with?
Let's see. Okay, definitely the one, and this is something I think that causes a lot of arguments in the Cats fandom, is whether Tugopheles is real or not. Whether Mistopheles and Tugger are a thing.
It's all the fan fiction. Besides yours, I guess.
It is true. It is true that I would say the majority of the fan fiction is the two of them. I have never shipped them. Part of that, I think, comes from the fact that when I first got into Cats, I was little and sheltered and did not know the gay people existed. and I interpreted them. I have very specific opinions about the family tree, which I think sort of.
Let's hear it. I want to hear it.
Because
I think there's a lot of ways to make arguments of like, that could be this, but if that is correct, mm-hmm. then this can't be correct.
Exactly.
But I could argue why this could be correct.
Right.
So I'm very curious what is your tree? Have you actually mapped it out?
I have, yeah, a couple of times.
Okay.
I've struggled to find a good way to do it because there's so many like interwoven bits that it gets very hard. A friend of mine did a spreadsheet of it. I was like, that's smart. For me, it starts with Old Deuteronomy, who is, you know, the Jellicle leader and the father of a lot of the cats. His four children that we know of, Munkustrap, Rumtum Tugger, McCavity, and this is unique only to the Broadway revival in my mind, but I know that I think Andy Huntington Jones mentioned it in maybe one of the vlogs, that Alonzo is Muggastrap's brother. So that's four cats who are Old Deuteronomy's sons. In my mind, Mistopheles is McCavity's son. He doesn't know that. Most of them don't know that. He's told that he's like Bustopher Jones's son because, you know, they're both like the black tuxedo cats. But
who's Mistopheles' mom then in this scenario?
Some unknown cat that does not like exist
unknown.
In the
okay.
show, just like someone.
Okay.
And he was sort of like, oh, and he and Victoria are siblings. So the two of them were sort of like rescued, taken away from McCavity, brought to the tribe and raised in the tribe. he finds out at some point that McCavity is his father, and that sort of causes some tension because, like, first of all, he gets his magical powers from McCavity.
Makes sense. Yep.
And there, it causes some tension because it's like, do they trust him, you know, in the tribe? Do they trust him to use his magic? Do they think he's going to, like, turn evil? So that's sort of a plot point that I've always been interested in. But what this means is that Tugger is his uncle. And so that is how I have always interpreted the family tree. And so the thought of shipping them never occurred to me when I was little. And most of my headcanons from when I was little have stayed with me until now.
Yeah, so that makes a ton of sense that you've already put them in the same family tree.
Right.
So that is an impossible scenario.
Right. I totally get it. You can buy that. Yeah, I totally get it though. Like, I understand, like, why people ship them, and I totally see it. It's just not my headcanon, and it's not like a ship that I am personally invested in. And as we know, I am a huge Tugger Shanks fan, and not that I don't think they could coexist, because there is definitely polyamory in Cats. Yeah. But
I think you created Tugger Shanks.
Oh yeah.
Really.
I did, which is so weird to think about, but I did.
I think that's amazing.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
All right. So I'm following along through the rest of your kind of Cats. How do you view then, like, Grizabella's arc? Like, what's her family relationship to who and her whole storyline?
This is something that has, like, changed a lot for me, and I don't know that I've completely settled on it, but there was a time when I really liked the theory that she was Tugger's mom. And so there's a little bit of me that's like, she had a thing with Old Deuteronomy at one point. And so one of my theories was that she was Tugger's mom, which I still kind of like, because they both sort of have that, like, I'm, you know, fabulous, like, whatever, except that, you know, she's sort of moved past that now and, you know, has fallen from grace in a way. And what I like about the theory that she's Tugger's mom is that he's afraid that he's going to go down that same path and that he's sort of going to wind up, like, no longer fabulous, like, everyone's going to hate him. Like, so there's that, which I really like. There's also, a theory that she is Demeter and Bombalurina's mother, which I also really like, and sort of explains why they're the ones, like, singing the song about her and why they seem to shun her so much because they're, like, ashamed of her. I think that's probably the one that I stick to the most, in terms of her, like, relation to the other cats. But definitely she was with the tribe. She was part of the tribe. She was a well-loved part of the tribe. And then I think she distanced herself from them unintentionally and either left of her own accord or was forced out. I don't really know which, and I don't, she's a character that I don't put a lot of thought into. All I know is that one thing that that happened in the Broadway revival that I want to say Mamie Paris mentioned in a vlog at one point, was that like she had a thing with McCavity and that's why she left. And that I'm just not on board with. No. I don't know what that was about, but I don't agree.
That one. So that is, I think, a strange one, because if you think about Demeter and McCavity's relationship, and then to your point, if they're mom and daughter, now it's like, that's also a little strange. Yeah. And then when you start bringing, like, if she is Tugger's mom, then that would be her nephew. Like, right. not necessarily, I guess, but like loosely, it's his brother.
Yeah.
This is where it gets very it's a lot of dotted lines.
Yes.
Okay, I want to do some rapid fire, but before I do that, I want to ask you, how would you, if you've got a friend who's never seen Cats, mm-hmm. and you're going to bring them, what's your sales pitch to like, come with me to see the show?
I have done this actually multiple times. and usually what I say is, look, it's a little crazy. You don't worry if you don't understand what's going on. Go and enjoy the dancing because it's amazing. Enjoy the music because it's amazing, and enjoy the spectacle of it. And just don't think too hard about it, and just like, and let them be singing Cats and just roll with it and have fun.
That's awesome. Okay. I want to do a couple quick rapid fire. If you were in the play,
okay,
which character would you want to perform? Mm-hmm.
Skimbleshanks.
Okay. Favorite cat and least favorite cat, not character, not actor, yeah. Cat.
Favorite, again, definitely Skimbleshanks. Least favorite, I have two. One is the like ironic answer, one is the unironic answer. Unironic, Jelly Lorem. I just have never liked her ever since I was little, and she still makes me angry for some reason.
You gotta explain why a little bit more.
Okay, Gus's song is so slow and so long, and when I was little, it just made me angry. So I didn't like her because she sang it, and I didn't like him because I didn't like his song. Now I love his song and I love him, but I've just never liked her. She's annoying. She's annoying. The ironic answer is Carbuckety. Random chorus cat. I have just simply always had a grudge against him. He makes me so mad, but also I talk about him so much that no one believes me when I say I don't like him.
That's a love hate.
Yeah, definitely.
If you were quarantined with a cat, which one would you pick?
Jenny Any Dots.
Why?
She is practical. She gets things done. But she does it like on her own schedule. The whole like sleeping during the day, being incredibly lazy, very me. And then when she's awake, when she's ready to go, being completely frantic, that is also me. So I think we would have like a good balance of sort of sleep, work, time.
So you're going to quarantine with a mirror image of yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then I usually ask, which cat would you want to write a Tumblr for? But I guess since you did that, what was your favorite character to be a Tumblr writer for?
I'm going to start sounding repetitive, but definitely Skimbleshanks. I think about him a lot.
Did you have any original characters for the Tumblr?
Not like in recent times. I had made up original characters when I was younger. Oh my God. I wish I could remember their names now. There is fan fiction that exists of them in like the depths of like old fandom stuff. It's out there, you know, if anyone cares to try to track it down, but, not recently. No, I tend to stick to like the canon characters.
What was your most read popular fan fiction story?
Ooh, probably one of the Tuggershanks ones, where I think it might have been like, it might have been the love confession one that I literally took like word for word from what Tyler and Jeremy told us they said on stage. Yeah, Probably that one. Or for my old fan fiction, I wrote one where Mephistopheles died, and for some reason people really liked that one. I always got comments on it. Very weird.
The first one makes sense. The first one is like an interesting angle. The second one seems like people are rooting against them.
I know. I think they were like, oh my God, this was so sad. It broke my heart. And I'm like, I was 9. Are you sure? Are you sure you thought this was good?
So usually my last question, which I do want to ask you, is I ask if you think I'm right or wrong on Grizabelle being the wrong cat to die. But based on the amount of like the depths of your fandom, mm-hmm. I want you to rank the cats in terms of most to least worthy or least to most worthy. And you don't have to do every like all ensemble characters, but at least the main characters. And then if you don't think they're even, because like I think you said in the celebration, there's some that don't even have a shot. If they don't have a shot, you can give them an incomplete grade. But how would you give, like, what is your order of if you're Old Deuteronomy and you're okay. doing your ballot all the way down? Let's hear the rankings.
We're gonna put Gus at the top, which I think most people would agree with. Although I respect Chris Gurr's like interpretation about him just sort of crawling under a tire to die, and I love that. But Gus at the top always has been. After that, probably Jenny Anydots. Like, she's getting old. She's like done her work. She has like proved that she is great, and she would be ready to go, I think. So I would put her next. Let's see. I'm going to appease like 2011 Nat and actually say number 3 is Old Deuteronomy himself. It is time for him to go.
Who takes over the choice if he leaves?
I think Munkustrap, who's always sort of been second in command. I think he would become the leader. I guess I'll say Grizabella after that. The thing is, I have no problem with her going. I just think there were other people who should have gone and would have gone if she hadn't showed up. But really, after that, those are really the only cats that I see as like being like ready to go. But if we're gonna judge based on performance alone, all of them after but that,
take
I would
my
say,
criteria.
I definitely Tugger, just because his performance is so fabulous. And then Mephistopheles, I mean, he like saves the day. Like, that's pretty great. That earns him a lot of points, I think. Skimbleshanks, who obviously is just great at what he does, and clearly everybody loves him. So that's a lot in his favor.
I expected you to rank Skimbleshanks higher based on everything you've said.
I think very highly of him. I just don't think he's ready to go. I think he has too much fun doing what he's doing. He likes this life.
That's even better. You know it's your favorite, yeah. but not ready to go.
Yeah, he's got to stick around. Bustopher Jones, just because. Yeah, I mean, he might even be in the group of cats who actually could go, and I would be okay with that. Toward the bottom, just because I don't like him very much, but like, yeah, he can go. Yeah, sounds good. You know, in conclusion, I've spent so long with these characters, and I've spent so many years thinking about them. You know, they're all like this big family, and they sort of feel like my family in a way, which sounds like really cheesy now that I say it, but that's what it's been like. And I feel like I know them so well, and just getting to spend so much time with them was such a joy for me.
And it's honestly why I wanted to have you on, is just hearing somebody that has such true fandom, got to experience it so many times from so many different angles, and be a part of of the community and have like, you know, and tell me again, for me as someone from the outside looking in, like where there's errors, where there's stuff that was wrong, what am I looking at incorrectly, which is the beauty of the show. So I really appreciate you taking the time to join me today and be part of this incredible Cats community.
Yeah, thank you for having me here. Thank you for giving me the chance to talk about cats, because I don't get to that often these days.
So with that, I want to thank you all for listening to this episode with Matt DiMario on The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the cat catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.